It's done.
Connor McDavid! It's not real!
The goal of the year?
Panarin!
Part of the past. The celebrations? Forgotten. The history?
Vegas Golden Knights!
History. We're back to a blank slate. Clean ice. All that matters now is what happens next. The Stanley Cup Playoffs.
Eastern Conference Final begins Wednesday.
Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with your host from SteelersDepot.com, where you can find all your latest and greatest Steelers news. It's Dave Bryan and Alex Cazzora, always Lynn, talking Steelers. And now, here's Dave and Alex.
Welcome to the Terrible Podcast, Season 14, Episode Number 1. He's Dave Bryan. I'm Alex Cazzora, SteelersDepot.com. Thanks for being back with us here this Friday, Steelers Nation, as we are about ready to embark on Day 2 of the Pittsburgh Steelers training camp practices. A new season for us, Episode 1, to kick off really the official start of the 2023 preseason, with the regular season just about, 6 weeks away. So really excited for that, and excited for 14 seasons of the Terrible Podcast, Dave.
Boy, who knew, right? It would get this far, but here we are. I still thoroughly enjoyed doing these shows. Man, we had a great first special edition of the Terrible Podcast, recapping your first day out at La Trobe 2023 training camp and all, and still get excited. I look forward to those. I look forward to doing these with you three times a week, and I don't see that stopping anytime soon, and obviously blessed to have you as a co-host all these years as well too. So let's get busy kicking off season 14, if you will.
If you guys missed it, Dave and I did the training camp recap, a special edition of the podcast last night. So we'll of course touch on camp today, I'm sure, throughout this episode, but the bulk of the camp information can be found in my camp diary, sticky to the top of the page on Steelers Depot. And of course, in that podcast that we did last night, so reference that if you want the full skinny on what happened in La Trobe on Thursday. Speaking of things that happened in La Trobe on Thursday, Pittsburgh Steelers GM Omar Khan speaking to the media, as well as team president Art Rooney II. And the headline kind of bounced off of the reporting on Wednesday and Mike Tomlin's comments about reportedly not getting a contract extension this year led some people to kind of wonder. But I think Art Rooney in particular really shot down any idea that Mike Tomlin was coaching for his job or anything remotely similar to that, saying that a contract will get done when it needs to get done, really just implying it's going to get done next year.
Yeah, he did. And obviously Omar spoke yesterday morning and, says, look, first of all, that's not my job, which you would think the media members would know that he's not the one deciding whether or not, when and if Mike Tomlin gets an extension there. But some really nice things, as you would probably expect him to say when it comes to Mike Tomlin and all, and, talking about how he expects the two of them to work, long into the future here, moving forward and all. So, that kind of set the stage, if you will, talking about that to, team president Art Rooney II, being a guest on Steelers Live, after training camp practice or during training camp practice, on Thursday there. And, I don't think there's really, I think he added pretty much all the context that we needed in his response to questions related to Tomlin, did he not?
Yeah, I mean, he said, that he expects Mike Tomlin to continue coaching past his current contract, which is about as forthright as you're going to get on a contract situation from, Art Rooney. And so it'll get done next year. It may get done next spring. I mean, this last contract extension Tomlin signed was in April of 2021. It may get done before camp, but barring something, incredibly unforeseen occurring it'll be done this time next year.
Here's exactly what Art Rooney II told Mike Pursuta yesterday. You know, we've done the contract at different points, and people seem to read more into that than is warranted. The contract will get done when it needs to get done. And as Omar said, I expect Mike to be here for a lot longer than the existing contract. And so we'll get it done when the time comes. So read into whatever you want to read into that, but
pretty clear, I think.
Yeah, it sounds pretty straightforward. And really, you know, when it comes to Rooney, he's left some gray area in the past on certain topics, not necessarily, in some contracts as well too, you know, I think there's less gray area here than ever before when it comes to, you know, him talking about contracts and, you know, specifically about Mike Tomlin's contract.
And that was intentional, because I'm guessing Rooney kind of felt or heard or noticed some of the discussion that happened on Wednesday when Jerry Dulac broke that story that Tomlin would not receive the extension this year. So I think Rooney's trying to put cold water on any idea, any notion that Tomlin's job security is not incredibly high. And we can debate whether or not it should be that, but that's certainly where it is. Let me just play devil's advocate for a moment and say, okay, if Art Rooney acknowledges a contract will happen, Tomlin will be coaching for a long time, why not do the deal this year? Why wait if you already acknowledge he's going to be, you know, the coach of the Steelers for a long, long time?
Yeah, that's a great question. I don't know. You know, other than just time, I don't know. I couldn't give you a great answer to that question of why not now.
Yeah, not that it matters much.
I don't know if it's finance. I don't know if it's finance related. I don't know if it is. Hey, you know, maybe, you know, even though this is almost guaranteed, we want to see what you. Maybe it's to put a little pressure. I don't know. I mean, it's a great question, and I do not have. How would you answer that very question?
I don't know. That's why I wanted to ask it before anybody else asked it, because I don't have the answer to that other than to say that Pittsburgh is a very process-oriented type organization and they do things on their own time. And often, although I'm not sure if it's always been the case, that Tomlin gets a deal a year out instead of two. I think it has happened once or twice where he's gotten a deal 2 years out before. But Pittsburgh loves their process and their order of things, and maybe just want to put the whole focus on the season and not contracts and deal with that next year.
Maybe it's an opportunity to give him an opportunity to earn more money, right?
that's also true. I mean, and he's well compensated. What, roughly $10 million per year right now?
Sure. What if he manages to get this team into the playoffs and win a couple of games? You know, and what does that do on the meter? How much does that move the price tag on him?
Yeah, it doesn't go down.
On the flip side, what if he doesn't make the playoffs? You know,
He'll still get paid well because he's right. Mike Tomlin, and he's going to get a pretty good paycheck. Anything else from Art Rooney? I don't know if he said. I listened to the whole thing, but that was kind of it.
That when it comes to Rooney, that was it. So when it comes to Tomlin, with both what Omar Khan and Art Rooney II had to say, I think we've covered that. So now we can jump back into what Khan had to say in the rest of his press conference.
Where do you want to start here? What do you think the biggest thing that Omar Khan had said? I don't know if there was one quote that struck me the most, but there were kind of some little things along the way that you said, okay, that's a little notable to talk about.
I thought it was interesting, you know, on the heels of specifically that article, and, you know, you wrote the other day about Cameron Sutton and all. Don't think these people don't read that stuff, right? You know, he was basically asked, as good as the offseason is gone or seemingly gone for the team, do they regret not re-signing Cam Sutton? And he says, I don't know if I want to deal in hypotheticals like that, but we had an opportunity. He was a free agent. His contract was up. He got a great opportunity to go to Detroit. He was very happy with that contract. We obviously had discussions. We talked about bringing him back, and it just didn't work out. And that's free agency. There was not a – I'd have to go back. He says, I don't really recall us having specific discussions on that last year, because he was essentially asked, why didn't they extend him a year out? You know?
But
look, I mean, it's going to be interesting to watch this play out this season. You know, they brought in another veteran in Patrick Peterson. It did feel, though, when you look at things in totality at this point, and we have talked about this a couple of times, and what he got paid with the Lions and all like that, the Steelers, push come to shove, they could have made a deal like that work that Sutton probably would have accepted.
Sure. I don't think it was financially impossible for them to figure out a way to do that contract. Now, I know, as you mentioned, Detroit added void years that helps, mm-hmm. you know, bring down the cap charge in those first couple of years of the deal. But Pittsburgh's, you know, financially, they were fine. Salary cap space, they're solid. And so if someone made them do a 3-year deal with Cam Sutton, they could have gotten it done.
Right. He was asked about the running back market and Najee Harris specifically, and he said, "I'm not going to get into, you know, specific discussions about a specific position group, but I'll just say, look, you don't have to be a mathematician to figure it out. But when quarterback salaries start increasing at the rate that they're increasing, at some point, it's going to have residual effects somewhere on the roster. Every franchise is going to handle things differently. It's up to every franchise to decide how to build their roster, but eventually that's going to have an effect when the quarterback salaries are growing at a rate higher than what the cap is." He says, "I get it. There's ways to get around whatever the cap number is, but it's just going to be a natural effect." So, you know, there you go. Instead of blame Canada, blame quarterbacks, right?
I guess so. Yeah, I don't have a whole lot more to add there. But, you know, again, when it comes to Najee Harris in the contract, it's talking point now, and that's fine. But it's not a reality that either side will have to deal with for at least until next offseason when we're talking about fifth-year option. I guess next May, I believe that deadline is. And so we're still a ways away before Harris is really able to seriously discuss long-term deals and fifth-year options and franchise tags. That's still going to be, you know, a ways down the road.
Right. Well, maybe. I've got an article I'm going to be posting on the site sometime later today on the heels of Mike Florio being asked on 93.7 if, you know, he thinks that the Steelers are headed for a drama situation next offseason with Najee Harris. And long story short, Florio says, you know, if Najee has a very good 2023 campaign, you know, he thinks that's the time for Najee to strike, you know, when it comes to that, because, you know, you look around the league, the way it's been done in the past with some of these guys, and we've mentioned several times the things like Christian McCaffrey, right? How rare that was that you got a former first round guy that got an extension after his third year and ahead of the fifth year option even being exercised there. So I do. Look, I think, you know, Mike Florio can be a sensationalist at times, mm-hmm. but I also do think he's been around this business long enough that he understands some aspects, financial aspects of it. And it is hard to kind of argue what he had to say when it comes to Najee after this year. But look, first and foremost, Najee's got to stay healthy. He's got to have a career year. And then he's got to see where the chips might fall from there. And look, being the situation that he's in with potentially facing a fifth-year option and then potentially back-to-back franchise tags, there's already a built-in ceiling there, right?
Mm-hmm. Right.
But and technically you would say, well, the Steelers, you know, you look at how they've treated their former first-round draft picks since the new CBA and the fifth-year option. That's working against Najee as well, too. Hell, if T.J. Watt can't get a new deal after his third season and has to go through the fifth-year option designation process before getting his new deal, before he's actually, you know, having to play in his fifth year, then why the hell should Najee expect otherwise, right? Now, there would be benefits related to both sides, I think, if Najee had a career year in 2023 and you went ahead and did get him extended early, quite honestly, if he doesn't get an extension next offseason, the likelihood of him getting one drops down tremendously. I guess where I'm going, and I'm not advocating this, so don't say, well, Dave says Najee should be extended if he has a good 2023 season. I wanted to put out there that it might be in the interest, really, for both sides to, if indeed he stays healthy and he has a career year in 2023, to get an extension done after, you know, before the fifth-year option decision is done. And I'll tell you why. For starters, what's going to happen to those top three guys at the top of the market by the end of March 2024? Talking about Christian McCaffrey, Alvin Kamara, and Derrick Henry. Alex, there's a decent chance that all three of those guys are not under contract at the end of next March, right?
Even McCaffrey, right? Okay, I wasn't aware of McCaffrey's situation too much, so you can probably speak to it better than I can.
I mean, you know, if he doesn't have a good season at the money he's making, right?
Right. Yeah, I guess it's all possible.
I mean, there's definitely a chance. I mean, it would be surprising if Kamara and Henry. Yeah, and Henry aren't, you know, free agents, because I think even Henry's contract voids and all like that. And Kamara's on an inflated deal anyway. His deal's so propped up as it is. So what I'm getting at, said, so what if you get in a situation where those top, where the top, where Nick Chubb is magically the highest paid running back in the NFL, at like $12.2 million new money average. What if you get to that point in late March, early April, ahead of the decision on Najee Harris being done and him coming off of a fantastic season, and then obviously having the mileage on him that he has and the age that he has. And look, the Steelers obviously have a ceiling above him when it comes to fifth year option, back-to-back franchise tags. Would it make sense to go ahead and lock him up early, only give him that first year guaranteed money? You know, anyway, nothing guaranteed beyond the first year. You could give Najee a new money average of $12.5 million. Ta-da! He becomes the highest paid running back in the NFL at $12.5 million. The thing is his fight for the security and guaranteed money went absolutely nowhere.
And
that would be something that he'd have to think long and hard about. But you don't have, you know, once again, he could walk around and say he's the highest paid running back in the NFL. He's, even though he's only guaranteed the 2024 money, he would be virtually guaranteed to play through 2024, 2025, 2026, more than likely, barring, you know, him just falling off a cliff there. And, you know, the Steelers get him locked up a year early at that point. Could cut him at any time after the 2024 season. You see where I'm going here? It's a long, drawn-out kind of explanation. And quite honestly, the plausibility of this happening because of precedent isn't great. But it's the best case. It's definitely the best case scenario for Najee. And it could be a plausible, better, you know, decent case for the Steelers next offseason as well.
Yeah, I guess that's where I come in and just wonder what's the incentive and urgency for Pittsburgh to do it, other than to make sure Najee's happy and doesn't create any sort of drama or any sort of stink or any sort of, you know, he could try to hold out. He'll be fine, though, $50,000 a day in training camp if he's held out and that money is not refundable. The CBA says, you know, the teams can't go reverse those fines. And so for a rookie contract to get fined $50,000 a day, not a small number for him. So I'm not sure if Pittsburgh has enough incentive to do that as opposed to just, you know, picking up his option and playing out his rookie deal. But again, let's get through this year. Let's see how he looks and we'll pick it up next year.
Yeah. And look, you know, Khan really hasn't, you know, touched that aspect of it other than to talk about the market. Yeah, you know, I just want to get this part of it in there, because I was going to write about it today. Once again, I'll ask you this right now. Do you think Najee Harris, if he does not get extended next offseason or next summer, will he see an extension at all?
Probably not, but you never know. I don't want to say definitively one way or another, but I understand your point. If he doesn't get extended sooner than later, then Pittsburgh will just do fifth year option, potential tag. And then by that point, he's later in his career, there's more mileage. And so Pittsburgh will be even more unwilling to give a long-term deal.
My whole thought on this, and once again, this is all predicated on having a career year, 1,700 or more yards from scrimmage, yada, yada, and all like that. I'm not advocating this. I'm just saying that this could be the best case scenario next offseason, definitely for Najee. And look, I mean, to get a deal done with what it would take to pay him even 12, assuming he's even worth the $12.5 million new money average, you know, you could do so with a negligible increase in his 2024 cap number overall, you know, and you, everybody could walk away moderately happy, especially Najee, because you wouldn't think he'd get guaranteed money past the first year there. To me, and once again, I'm not advocating this. Deep down inside, I don't think it's going to happen. I just want to throw it out as an option because Mike Florio talks about after the third year, that's when it's best for these running backs to strike, especially if there's
What does strike mean? Like, is he saying just for Najee to strike or for all the running backs to strike?
For all running backs. He talks about Saquon, you know, had Saquon not had the injury that he had, it would have been a perfect opportunity for him to because the whole subject of drama was brought up. You know, will next offseason be a drama situation for Najee Harris? And Florio went on to explain why after year three is the best time for the running backs to make noise because, you know, due to the situation that, you know, the market that they're dealing with right now.
Okay. I don't think the whole running back, you know, class is going to strike because Najee, you know, wants that new deal. I mean, it's going to be a different decision.
No, what I mean by strike, by try to strike, I don't mean like strike. I mean, attack.
Oh, I see what you're saying. While the iron's hot.
Strike while the iron's hot. Not a literal strike.
Okay. Because I know there's been some talk about the running backs trying to have their union and actually going on strike. So I was a little confused about that. Okay. Yeah. I mean, he can try.
I might as well read real quick what Florio said. He was asked, is Najee headed for a drama situation? And he says, well, yes, and that's the bottom line when it comes to any of these individual running backs. If you have a big third year, if you're a drafted player, you can't renegotiate your contract by rule for three full regular seasons. For any running back that has a big third year, that's when you, make your move. Whether you do it behind the scenes and you convince the team to give you a long-term deal like Christian McCaffrey did with the Panthers a few years back after his third season. And his third season, he became the third guy ever to have 1,000 yards rushing and 1,000 yards receiving. Or you do what Ezekiel Elliott did 4 years ago, where he held out and he stayed away until the Cowboys gave him a deal he was looking for. So that's Florio's look ahead into, you know, the situation with Najee. Now, I'm not advocating Najee hold out. He might hold in, you know, we'll cross that. But A, he's got to stay healthy and have a great season first and foremost. And you know, I don't think either one of us are expecting 1,000-yard receiving season out of Najee Harris. I mean, I think if Najee hit 1,700 total yards from scrimmage, I think it'd be reason to celebrate.
Yeah, it's different situations. McCaffrey was a bigger part of the offense and more productive overall. And Zeke's holdout, I believe, was this current CBA that penalizes and has those fines for guys who hold out that cannot be rescinded. So, you know, again, we'll get through this year. We'll deal with it next year. We'll see what the fifth year option decision is, because that'll come before probably anything else in terms of any potential extension and go from there.
And you know, it sounded like Khan just wanted to kind of just brush it off and blame it on the quarterbacks and move along, he's got a point, you know, the money's got to go somewhere and you only have a limited amount of cap space, yada, yada. And teams, are still only going to spend at most 100% of the cap in cash over a 3-year span. Right.
Right, right. Speaking of running backs, I thought Colin had an interesting answer about the depth of the position. We talk so much about the starters, and rightfully so, with Najee Harris at the top, followed by Jaylen Warren, who's going to have a big, significant role this year. But Colin was asked about how you feel about the depth of the running back room, and basically, why didn't you add a veteran or bring in somebody else? And Colin said if he didn't feel good about the current guys on the roster, they would have made that move. And so that was kind of a nod towards the likes of Anthony McFarland. And you mentioned Jason Huntley by name, and got a couple of interesting rookies in there, and Alfonso Graham and Darius Hagan. So as I've talked about throughout the offseason, although it won't be the most consequential battle immediately for Pittsburgh, but that third running back spot feels pretty wide open, and I think we'll make a really good competition this summer.
And if someone is brought in from the outside, to be a number three running back, a guy with experience, that guy's not going to be a big name, and it's going to have to be on a minimum deal, and he's probably going to have to play special teams. So why not see if some of these younger guys can get it done first?
Right, and that's what they'll do. And as I mentioned yesterday, Anthony McFarland working third string running back, seeing the majority of that time behind Harrison Warren, Jason Huntley sprinkling in, not much action from Graham and Hagans, but the rookies, their first camp practice, that can and probably will change throughout the summer. So we'll keep an eye on that throughout.
What did you think about his answer about the construction of the roster and the whole, we could have wrote out the answer that he was going to give for this, right? You know, about offense versus defense, money and all like that.
I forget exactly what he said, what you're referencing there.
He was talking about, let's see if I can find the answer here. When you look at the way you guys construct and pay your roster across the league, people are adding offensive weapons, paying offense a lot of money. You guys are kind of doing the opposite on defensive, basically ask, are you confident that's the way to maybe zig while everybody else is zagging? And Khan said, we don't really look at it that way. If there's a good player and he deserves to get paid, it's my job to try to lock him up. Mm-hmm. But we don't look at it as, hey, we're paying too much to the defense. It's just sort of how, I guess it's, I haven't studied it enough the way you guys had to really, he didn't. You know, and this has always been, back when Kevin Colbert was GM as well, too. Any good player, they try to keep no matter what side of the football it's on.
What a concept. Keep good players. Draft, develop, retain. Yeah, I mean, I know that Colin Cowherd, anytime any defensive player gets paid more than the minimum, he goes off on a big rant about how they can't pay that guy. They should just pay the offense instead. But, I mean, if your option is to keep Alex Highsmith or lose Alex Highsmith, which is better for your team? Keeping Alex Highsmith is better for your team. And it does not preclude this team from being able to add offensive pieces. They've done that in the draft. They've done that in free agency. And we all know the case in Pittsburgh that they've invested a ton of draft capital in offense over the last couple of classes, those guys on the rookie deals that shifts the balance in terms of where the money is. Defense drafted first, and so those guys got paid first, but there's a ton of draft capital in the offense right now. Those guys will eventually get paid, and that will balance out those scales. So in Pittsburgh, I think everyone understands the context of the finances and how it's allocated, offense versus defense.
Right. All right. The other two really, I guess, talking points from Con that are worth covering today and within an hour time frame. The center position, he was asked about the center position, potential backups and the versatility of some of those players. And then he was also asked kind of about the inside linebacker position. Let's start with a center position first, especially on the heels of you seeing one practice at training camp.
Yeah, there's really not much new to add. I don't know if Con really did so, just kind of mention the names that we assume we're going to be in that running behind Mason Cole, Kendrick Green working second team, Ryan McCollum working third team. I know that Con was asked about, could a James Daniels move around? I don't know if he really even ever addressed that in his answer, but, you wonder if a Nate Herbig could potentially do that. He's got a bit of a background at center, and he's going to be a backup in all likelihood to start the year. So we'll let this thing play out, kind of like running back, and see how those guys do.
He asked, he said they were interested in seeing McCollum in pads, and that's a guy that you've written about. You think there's a decent chance of McCollum. And really, I think I put McCollum on my 53-man mm-hmm. roster as well, too. So I think there is a chance that, he could be that guy. And, you know, obviously I think he was asked about the experience of some of the other guys in the room with that. But I guess where I'm going with this is, you know, after one practice, the three centers that you observed on the first day of training camp practice were Mason Cole, Kendrick Green, and Ryan McCollum, right?
Correct. Those were the three in order.
And Spencer Anderson was at right tackle, and Nate Herbig was at right guard, correct?
Correct. Herbig, second team right guard. Anderson was third team right tackle.
All right. How optimistic, or look into your crystal ball, how much time at center do you think we'll get to see, or you'll see, either Herbig or Anderson at center in the next, I don't know, seven practices? If you had to guess.
Yeah, I think we'll see it some. I think we'll see somebody else get a couple of center reps. Maybe Anderson more so than Herbig, if I had to guess. But I really don't know for sure. I mean, they do want to obviously get reps and evaluate Green fighting for a job. And McCollum, I think, an interesting guy. He was on their practice squad all last year. So it's hard to say for sure. Injuries can obviously impact that. Somebody goes down, it's going to shift lines. And that's when the versatility kind of gets revealed. You lose a guard, and the guy that's playing tackle now maybe plays guard to cover, and they start moving things around. So it is really hard to say. But I imagine at some point they're going to get at least a look at an extra guy just to see what someone else can do and what they can potentially provide.
Before the first preseason game, you think that'll happen?
Again, it's really hard to say.
I'm only going to hold you to this if you're wrong.
I know that's what I'm worried about. I'll say yes. I think they probably mix and match, and with camp, an injury is going to occur somewhere, even if it's just a day off and somebody's dinged, whatever the case is. So yeah, I don't know who it's going to be, but I'd say that you'll see Anderson and or Herbig and or somebody else get a rep at center during a team drill at one point before a preseason game.
Okay, I'm going to guess no, but you can't hold that against me if I'm wrong. It doesn't work both ways. Well, I'm you know, something we've talked about here, but here's the money shot with Khan. He went out of his way to say, with Ryan McCollum, excited to see him out here next week in pads, and we feel good about the options back there. Okay. First and foremost, this is Anderson's first camp. You want to get him probably, you know, comfortable with at least just one spot, right? And it looks like it's going to be right tackle to start with. Now, obviously, he has moved up. He moved up and down the line at Maryland and all like that. I guess what I'm getting at there is I'm not so sure they're going to take a long look at, and you know, Herbig or Anderson. But if you know, if they do, they got to figure out what those guys can do to some degree other than a few snaps here and a few snaps there in practice. Would you want to see a guy like Anderson or Herbig actually play center in a preseason game? Or is practice enough to figure out, well, that guy can be our backup center?
Yeah, I mean, obviously you would like them to get game action, but you're trying to, you know, juggle a lot of hats here and give Green time and give McCollum time, and those guys obviously are going to get the first crack at it. So it's hard to say with Anderson. I mean, you drafted him because he's versatile. And so hopefully you can display some of that, or at least see some of that, and see how it goes throughout the summer. I think obviously at the start of camp, you're kind of putting guys more in one spot to kind of let them get comfortable. But if you're not moving them around, you're kind of, you know, doing yourself a disservice because you drafted a guy because he can play different spots, and you want to see how that looks in the NFL. So it's a long process. It's a delicate line to walk, trying to give everybody time on a 90-man roster. But I think Anderson should get some time in some regard just to start testing the waters there, even if it's not a thing where he enters the year as the backup center. But let's say, God forbid, injuries occur and you're on, you know, second, third string needing a backup to the backup. And then you have a guy like Anderson who at least has done it to some degree in the NFL and can kind of lean on that as you scramble midseason whenever injuries strike.
I will start and look, we got a long way to go here. We got just one camp practice in the books and all. I'll still maintain that my expectation is for the backup center to be one of Green or McCollum or somebody not currently under contract.
That's fair.
I'll be surprised if it goes another direction. Now, for me not to be surprised. I think they would have to start figuring some of this stuff out with a guy like Herbig and a guy like Anderson, sooner rather than later there, you know. And look, if Anderson was your sweet, was, let's say Anderson by some stretch ends up getting some work there, yada yada, and you feel comfortable enough with him being your backup center, what does that do to your game day actives?
Okay, you're taking this like 8 steps down the road. I don't know right now.
Well, you know me, I love to overthink this stuff, you know. But anyway, it was interesting to hear him talk on that. And my kind of takeaway was, well, yeah, we have other guys that can do it, but we really think at this stage and point, it's going to be Kendrick Green or Ryan McCollum. And if they can't do it, you know, I think it's open for a lot of speculation past then.
Sure. And I agree with you. I think the backup center will be one of Green, McCollum, or an outsider. I don't disagree. That's why I put McCollum as my backup center on my roster prediction. And that's why those guys are getting the time there to start training camp. I would just say, if a Spencer Anderson or a Nate Herbig or whoever gets a couple of reps at center in a practice or even maybe late in the game, it doesn't necessarily have to mean they're fighting for that backup job. It may just be, here's a guy who can play around different spots. Let's see how he looks there, because, you know, what happens if in October we got to turn to this guy for whatever reason, disaster strikes, and they just have some reps and some experience there. So they may be a little less of like those guys directly in the battle and just more of, let's, you know, exercise their versatility and just get a look there just so they have something to lean on if it's ever needed throughout the course of the regular season.
Sure. You got to be set up for a break glass in case of emergency situation. I get that. All right. What about Khan on, you know, the inside linebacker position?
Yeah. I mean, I think when he spoke, was it Roberts he was talking about, I think? And, you know,
well, he was asked specifically, let's see. Let me see if I can find out where he was asked. How do you feel about the depth in that inside linebacker room? And how do you feel from a coverage standpoint that room can be better than last year? He says, we signed the guys that we did just because we felt we had to get better. And I think we're going to be better with those guys. He says, I'm confident in the group that we have there. I've said this before. If there's an opportunity to upgrade a position group, we're always going to look at it. And if it makes sense, it makes sense. Now, you can look at that two different ways. You can say, well, you know, he made sure to say upgrade a position group, not necessarily the linebacker position group. But then you can also, you know, in other words, cover his bases that way. But on the flip side, you can say, well, why did he even talk about upgrading a position group when it wasn't kind of necessarily directly asked if he would consider it? Why did he throw out that extra, you know, because you can diagram this sentence any way you want to, right?
Yeah, I just kind of view this as general GM speak. He didn't really address anything directly. Of course, he thinks they've upgraded the inside linebacker spot with how they overturned that room, and he's always going to leave the door open for anything in the future at any position, because you never know what may come up with your own injuries, your own evaluation, what becomes available through trade, through cuts and waiver claims, all that kind of stuff. So to me, this was just kind of a very general catch-all. We're happy with the group. We think we got better. We're always going to keep the door open to explore external options.
All right. He talked a little bit about the cap and say, you know, a lot of the things that I talk about throughout the offseason, that you want to have a little bit of a buffer there when it comes to the salary cap, to be able to spend extra money and upgrade your roster in the meantime there. So he did hit on that. He threw out he says, yeah, always need to have a buffer, like to keep our options open. If there's an opportunity to upgrade our team, we want to be able to do it if it makes sense. He says the buffer changes every year. As long as you have, he says, I can give you an arbitrary number. Let's call it 5 million. I just need to know there's places where I can create later on in the off season if I have to.
Such as a TJ Watt restructure, which you've right. talked about, and we're still monitor that. If that were to happen, would that be a right before the season, regular season?
I think so. I think you want to make sure he gets through whatever preseason time that, especially on the heels of, you know, restructuring him last year and all. Any restructure with Watt, if and does it. Now, look, there, you could paint out some scenarios where there's a possibility maybe they don't have to do it. But it still does kind of feel like maybe a partial restructure will come with him. And I would expect that to happen probably right around the time that they're putting together the final 53.
Right. That makes a lot of sense there. Anything else from Omar Khan? That was basically, he doesn't expect any other contract extensions to take place this offseason. Didn't close that door, but we don't really expect any name to come up there. So should be pretty quiet on that front. And he did give the vote of confidence that he believes that himself and Mike Tomlin will be in Pittsburgh for a long, long time. That was addressing and kind of sidestepping the Tomlin extension, because as you said, that is above Khan's pay grade.
All right. You want to highlight some things from the first training camp practice on Thursday and the things you're looking forward to on the second practice on Friday?
Well, we should mention just briefly, it's a new look Steelers, new practice jerseys. They got these yellow sleeves. I don't know if I'm crazy about them, but I really could care less.
I like the yellow ones a lot better. I like the defensive ones. They look like the Gotham Gotham City Rogues.
I do like those ones better than the offense, but they can wear whatever. I don't care as long as they're looking good and staying healthy out there. But did anyone say why they have new jerseys? Is this just change for the sake of change, or is there any certain reason behind it? Do you know?
I don't know. There's probably some marketing on there somewhere, right?
I was going to say, I didn't see a logo or anything, but I might have missed it. I wasn't looking too much. Who was it? The Yankees just got what team has like a patch on their uniforms now? It might have been the Yankees. Everyone was kind of roasting them for that. But anyway, doesn't matter too much. In terms of day one, it is just one day. The team was in shells, so no pads. And so evaluations can be tricky, and you don't want to make too many reactions, positive or negative. But I thought, receiver DB play pretty interesting. I thought DBs won the day. Joey Porter, a nice day. Patrick Peterson showing some versatility. Elijah Riley with an interception, and he's a guy fighting for a spot, slot corner possibility. So that was interesting. Calvin Austin, Hakeem Butler struggling to finish some plays that they're capable of making. And so I thought those guys, thought the DBs were kind of winning the day overall against the receivers. But I thought Austin, Hakeem Butler in particular, struggling a bit. Cody White, a nice day for Cody White, making a couple of catches.
All right. Any other revelations since we did the Thursday night special edition podcast to tack on top, or did you say, did you review it kind of how you thought? And in other words, nothing came to mind after the fact, did it?
I do want to I think I might have mentioned this on the podcast, but just with George Pickens, wrote the article today, just him looking comfortable with his motions and just running a full route tree. There was no crazy catch yesterday, but we know he can do that. I thought actually he looked just more natural, more comfortable, and that was going to be the biggest thing, the biggest step that he could take in year number two, was kind of really becoming a well-rounded receiver, not just a one-note vertical guy, although he can do that very well. He will do that in 2023, but just seeing a guy that looked like he was a true receiver and not just the go deep kind of guy.
All right. And what are things you're looking for kind of today specifically? I think you're going to try to have eyes on Chandon Sullivan today, right?
Yeah, I know Tomlin mentioned him in that nickel pairing, and Tomlin very clear he didn't care about Duke Dawson running first team slot corner. He said he didn't know who was going to be out there. He didn't care who was out there first team. They're going to get looks at all these guys.
Do you buy that?
Somebody's got to be the guy. There's got to be a reason that Duke Dawson was first team slot corner. Doesn't mean he's going to stay there, but it's something to note, to me at least. But I didn't even see Sullivan, so I may have missed him. I want to get eyes on him today just to kind of get my bearings down on that. Other things, I want to see Pat Freiermuth. I think he was standing up in the slot some yesterday, so I want to get a better view of that today and continue to watch some of these guys like at the Marvin Leal in the slot corner battle. And because there's a ton of guys playing slot corner right now, whether it's Dawson, Peterson, Norwood, Riley, Sullivan. It's going to be in that mix as well. So it's really a throw it all at the wall and see what sticks situation.
All right. And you'll be watching to see, hoping Calvin Austin III can kind of have a bounce back day, right?
Yeah. Like I said, just one day. And so the guys that had good days yesterday, you need to stack them, need to continue those. The guys that may have struggled, a chance to rebound. That's the great thing about camp. They're back out there 24 hours later, and you're immediately going to be able to hit the reset button. So you could have a great day today, and we're totally having a different conversation. And again, once the pads come on, the evaluation really begins. Right now, it's kind of glorified OTAs. And so there's more urgency now than there was in OTAs, but it's still not a true football environment.
And you'll obviously be tracking the offensive line and defensive line rotations and where's DeMarvin Leal and and those kind of things. It does seem though that Omar took the truth serum way back at the combine, right? They're going to continue to lean on his versatility, at least what you've seen after one practice, right?
Yeah, he was doing everything yesterday. Now, I think it was more hand down than standing up, but he did stand up on at least one rep that I saw in team, and he worked base end, he worked interior nickel packages, he worked, you know, stand up edge linebackers. So yeah, true to Collinsworth, true to what Liao said reporting to camp, he is going to wear all the hats this year.
Okay. You and I will be back to recap the Friday training camp practice later this evening for about 30 to 40 minutes there. I guess we should, you know, obviously hit on Joe Burrow's situation, right?
Yeah, seems to be a better best case scenario for the Bengals. Joe Burrow carted off yesterday with a calf injury. Obviously, very scary moment there, but the report is a calf strain. I don't know exactly what the timetable for that will be. Obviously, you would very much assume the Bengals will be incredibly cautious with Joe Burrow.
Joe Burrow's going to be incredibly cautious with Joe Burrow.
That's the most important, probably, conversation point there. But point is, it sounds like Burrow has avoided a serious injury that would jeopardize his season. So that's obviously good news for the Bengals.
If you're his agent right now, what are you doing?
Ever seen the movie Bubble Boy? Put Joe Burrow in one of those bubbles, let him roll around camp, and he cannot do anything else until a new contract's in hand.
I mean, there's no way you put yourself back out there right now, right? I mean, you throw the footballs on the side, you do all the individual stuff. I don't even, with a calf injury now too, I mean, how much is he even going to be able to run around while you know, to whatever degree that thing is that it needs to heal? You know, I think I just put him out there and let him just mingle with the guys and kind of teach along the way. I don't know if I'd ask him to do anything more than just stationary, throw a few footballs.
So I think it'll be pretty slow with Joe Burrow until you know, obviously the contract's in hand, and he should then become the highest paid quarterback and highest paid player in football. I assume, because he'll jump Justin Herbert, who just earned that contract. So these quarterbacks getting paid, you know, tons of money. And that's fine. I'm not knocking them for it, but their market has obviously exploded in the past 5 years or so.
All right. Any other Steelers players in their talk, in their scrum sessions from Thursday that you thought was topical, need to be addressed?
Let's see. Pat Freiermuth said that he thinks Pittsburgh can have the best, or have among the best offenses in football. I don't know. Yeah, it's a little optimistic, but players should be optimistic. They should be confident. So my question to you is, what are your realistic expectations for the Steelers offense this year in terms of, you know, points per game and how successful they can be?
I mean, after one practice and
not one practice, but just what your thoughts were coming into this year before even the practice occurred. How good can this offense be?
I tell you what, my optimism right now is a lot. I wouldn't say a lot. It is higher than it was going into the offseason, I think. Just from the sheer fact they upgraded the offensive line. And I think most of that optimism, I don't think they're going to be top 10 offense in the league. You know, I think if they can even get to the middle of the pack, I think that would be speaking. I think that'd be a good job there. I think it's just mostly related. My optimism taking a click up is just related to the synergy of we're closer to the start of the season and the juices are flowing, and, you know, Kenny, from what I understand, had a pretty decent first day and everybody's healthy and you got a lot of guys that have been to, you know, outside of those offensive linemen, you got a kind of a nucleus that's been together. You got a veteran guy adding in and Allen Robinson, the second, to kind of be the glue in that wide receiver room, just kind of arbitrary things to attach yourself to make you have feel good feelings inside. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. I mean,
I do think they can score more points, and they better score more points per game. But, you know, are we talking 21, 22, 23 points? I mean, I think if you're able to reach a point where you're scoring 23 points a game, Matt, they might build a statue out of Matt Canada.
I don't know about that.
At that point, I'm not that optimistic. But I look, I expect it to be better than last year. To what degree? I think Kenny's just really, and I've said this throughout the offseason, I think he's just really represented himself well from the moment he was picked, you know? And I think he's going to feel a lot more comfortable. And you know, they basically have said that, right? I mean, how would he not feel a lot more comfortable coming in? He has even said it, coming into this training camp as the defined starter, unquestioned starter, having his, you know, the 12 games that he played in behind him, having more say in the offensive game plan and all like that. How can you not have optimism that it will be better than what the offense that we saw last year? But within that, to what degree, I'm still undecided on that. But I will tell you that my optimism is slightly higher than it was coming out of the 2022 season. But I think that's just the fandom synergy and the start of the season and new beginnings and all like that related to that. Ask me in another 3 weeks.
I mean, there's reason, you know, tangible, objective reason to believe this offense can and should and needs to be better when you have more talent, more continuity, and identity. This team knows who they are, how they win it, when they didn't have that the first half of last year. So they should be better. The question is, how much better? How much? What is the goal? I think, you know, to me, minimum top half of the league in scoring. That's, you know, 15th at least, I would say, but hopefully obviously higher than that. Top 10 in red zone offense, cut down on turnovers, more big plays. You do those things, you know, even if you're not the fourth best offense in football. If you're like the 13th or 12th best offense in football, points per game wise, your defense plays well like we expected to, that's going to get you in the playoffs at the very least. And so where you go from there, you know, who knows? But if you can do those things, that's kind of your overall recipe for getting back to the postseason.
I will say this. If this team was able to win 9 games last year, why shouldn't there be any reason to think that they can't at least be one game better than that last year? So in other words, you know, 10 wins. And if you're talking about a 10-17, there's some pretty good chances in there of at least making it to the playoffs, right? Now, I know there was a USA Today prediction, I think, that had the Steelers, 11-6 and not making the playoffs or something like that. I mean, it would be super hard, and you'd have to have a lot of bad luck, I think, around the conference to have 11 wins and not make the playoffs. Could it happen? Sure. I suppose so. I will say, you know, here's where I am. I was already at kind of 9.5 wins for this team before, you know, heading, you know, through the middle of the summer. I don't see why, unless a lot of injuries happen on both sides of the football, why this team can't be a 10-win team at a minimum. So a 10-11 win team, I think, should be in expectations.
That's fair. I understand that. And I do struggle with that because in one half of my mind, I sit there and say, as you just made the point, this was a 9-8 team last year, despite being a 2-6 team, being one of the worst teams in the league at the bye week with all the upgrades, everything that looks better. How can they not win at least one more game compared to last
That's
year?
Where I'm at.
So I totally understand that. But then I go, you know, they still went, can they go on a 7-2 stretch the way that they went on last year? Just statistically speaking, can you really do that in the AFC that is so tough and these games are going to be so close? And, you know, can Pittsburgh continue to just have this incredible record of winning one possession games? They're just so good at it. They've been so successful at it. Will their luck, quote unquote, run out eventually? So can they, my concern almost is that they're going to be like objectively a better team in 2023 than 2022, but also still win just 9 games, you know, because the AFC is just so darn competitive. So I don't know what to make of all that, but that is a fair thought because this team is better than it was a year ago and they won 9 games a year ago. And so logically you would sit there and say, okay, you can at least win 10 with this current group.
My mind immediately drifts to, okay, what would prevent this team from being a 10 win team in 2023? And the only thing I could come up with is it being two factors: a lot of injuries, and especially on the defensive side of football. And the second thing is, you know, Matt Canada just still can't figure this thing out, how to best best utilize the weapons that he has. Those would be the two things that I could foresee. Well, this team went no more bumper sticker. This team went 8-9. You know,
right?
Those are the reasons. I think that you could predict to be attached to it. Injuries and offensive, identity, creativity, blah blah blah, related to Canada.
Sure, I understand that. I think you're right on both counts. And again, just the AFC North being really good, where you might kind of lose a couple of divisional games because it is just so many talented teams in there. We sit there and say the Steelers were a good team. They just lost that Ravens game in that last second field goal where Justin Tucker 67 yarder, something like that, where you just kind of talk about that kind of stuff. But yeah, fair points there.
Okay, shall we table everything until tonight?
You want to get a couple of reader emails quickly and then close out today's show?
I don't know if we have too many. I haven't really looked, to be honest with you.
I don't know if I have anything camp-wise. Maybe people sending something in after the first day. Usually we get a couple of comments, couple of questions.
Here's one from Chris Lookart. Says, let's see. Reports are saying that Kenny's arm looks a lot more lively. He said his arm looks stronger and he's throwing the ball a lot tighter down the field. Did you get that sense too? He mentioned, they mentioned a few balls to Pat and Hayward specifically and a ball to Robinson. So everybody already wants to know after one practice, does Kenny's arm look more lively, stronger?
Yeah, it'd be very trendy and very easy for me to say, yes, Kenny's arm looks so much better than a year ago. I know that Pickett said he probably felt like his arm got stronger this offseason. It probably has to some degree, just from a mechanical standpoint, from as you said, kind of working his core standpoint. Arm strength is not just your literal arm; it's built ground up. Your feet, your hips, your core, all that kind of stuff. So I mean, there's probably been something there. I'm not going to pretend like I was blown away by the arm yesterday, or it felt like incredibly different, but. When you have a guy that's more comfortable, more confident, more sure of himself, more sure of the playbook, the arm's going to look better. You're going to, speed things up and you're just going to look better overall. So certainly compared to a year ago, Pickett's first week at camp where he struggled and looked like a rookie, which was fine. There's a big difference there. But does the arm look, amazing? I'm not going to go that far. But he had a good day yesterday. There was no question about that. And he threw the ball well.
I mean, ask you in two more weeks, right? Three more weeks. So you have
get in the game. I want to see this in the game.
Right. And as I always like to say this time of year, man, I'm not there. I live through Alex's eyes and written and spoken word. So until preseason starts, I have to put a lot of what I my analysis into the preseason games for obvious reasons, Aaron. I do that every year and it has served me well. So until we get into some of these preseason games, I have to take what Alex has to say and then try to form that up into an opinion. So in no way, shape, or form can I talk on Kenny's arm or anything like that at this point there. So and we try, and as Alex always tries to, and I think you even put this out there, don't overreact to anything, especially early on. First, no pads on in practice kind of practices.
Right. And with Kenny Pickett, like he's like at this point, you still want to see the evaluation of that jump, obviously, but I expect him to look good in training camp practices against his own team. Once you go through the whole season and you're facing, the Baltimore Ravens on the road in a game that you have to win to keep your playoff hopes alive. Training camp is pretty easy compared to all that. So the game should slow down. He should look good. And so obviously you want to make sure he's looking good and you want to see how it looks inside stadium. That's probably more important to evaluate the jump for him. I'm not expecting Pickett to look poor in these situations because of all he's been through over the last 12 months.
All right. That's the only question we have. So we'll end it there until you and I reconvene Friday night for another special edition of the Terrible Podcast to wrap up the Steelers' second training camp practice of 2023. In the meantime, you can follow me on Twitter at Steelers Depot. Follow Alex at Alex_Kozora. Follow the show at Terrible Podcast. Email the show, the Terrible Podcast steelersdepot@gmail.com. If you like what we do and want to donate to the cause, steelersdepot.com. Hit the donate button up right navigational bar. Also, if you want an ad-free version of the site, steelersdepot.com. Hit the ad-free button. So busy day ahead of us. Alex, drive safe and to and from Latrobe today, and I'll talk to you later on tonight. And as always, thanks for listening to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Alex.